Be seated.
Court is ready to hear argument in 110079 Encore Electric versus Dallas Area Rapid Transit.
May it please the court, Mr. Ho will present argument for the petitioner and Mr. Sasser will present argument for the amicus. Petitioners reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Ho will open with the first 10 minutes and will present the rebuttal.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Disagreement with the opinion below has been both vociferous and widespread, but is now irrelevant and unnecessary for this court to resolve. That's because last summer, the legislature accepted the court's invitation below to issue guidance that condemnation actions such as this one does not implicate governmental immunity. DART has two basic arguments in response to our contention that HB 971 applies to and provides a much easier way to resolve this case. First, DART says that it would be impermissibly retroactive to apply 971 to this case. This is wrong on two levels. It is applying 971 to this case would not be retroactive at all, let alone impermissibly so, because it is a new prospective relief statute, as well as happening to be a new immunity waiver statute. First, courts routinely apply new prospective relief laws to pending cases, and doing so is not retroactive, as this court just recently reminded litigants unanimously in the Aaron Sibia ruling. This is an eminent domain condemnation case. So we're not asking for damages or backward-looking relief of any kind. This case is just about the adjudication of future rights, not past conduct. DART does not dispute any of this. And for this reason alone, applying 971 to this case would not be retroactive. So turning to their second backup argument, they submit that DART is the state for purposes of 971. This, too, is wrong on two levels. First, it's not true. DART is not the state. DART is a political subdivision of the state, as their briefs acknowledge. And these are, of course, profoundly distinct concepts, as the legislature has repeatedly made clear. And DART does not cite a single authority to the contrary. Moreover, the distinction between state and political subdivision is particularly relevant and poignant in the immunity context. As this court has repeatedly noted, the state, as the sovereign, enjoys sovereign immunity, something that political subdivisions do not.
Political subdivisions enjoy governmental immunity.
A very distinct, different kind of immunity. And of course, legislature has seen fit in a variety of occasions to waive one form of immunity, but not the other. Second, DART's argument would render 971 meaningless. After all, 971 is targeting all public land, except for state land. Under their view, all would become no public land, none. And this court has repeatedly and unanimously reaffirmed that immunity is waived if the provision in question would otherwise be meaningless in the absence of a waiver.
It's not very specific. We have said that you look at it and what else could it mean, but it could have said immunity is waived and it doesn't. What's your reaction to that? 971 does not say immunity is waived in just so many words.
That's true. They don't have the magic words that the legislature could have used. But I think this court has said equally emphatically and unanimously that it doesn't take magic words, words that would be tantamount to a waiver. Authorizing a cause of action, that would obviously be enough. That's what the court, I believe, said in Taylor and Took and several other cases. If there are no further questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ho.
Thank you.
May it please the court, we agree with Encore that the ruling below is wrong as a matter of law and that HB 971 easily resolves these issues. But we're here for a very different reason. We're here on behalf of the private property owners of Texas to make this one very simple point, that the ruling below is not just legally wrong, it's very troubling as a matter of constitutional values, and the opinion below cannot stand. One of the central mistakes of the controversial Kelo decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that it failed to recognize the fundamental importance of straining the eminent domain power. Now, we would submit that the ruling below, if left to stand, is the Texas version of Kelo, because it leads to a greater taking of private property by giving public land a very, very broad exemption. If anything, eminent domain should be applied first to public land and then only to private land when necessary. That should be the prevailing principle. Just over a few years ago, 81% of the people of Texas voted in response to the Kelo decision to strengthen Texas private property rights. The Kelo decision itself involving as an antagonist a political subdivision served as that catalyst for Texans to rein in the power of eminent domain in the face of some noted abuses. Now, DART claims to be exempt from the very power they and other governmental entities hold over private property owners in Texas by invoking this doctrine of governmental immunity. Now, the people of Texas enjoy broad property rights under the Texas Constitution that are self-executing, as this court found in Steele versus City of Houston. That is, the Texas Constitution itself, under Article 1, Section 17, waived judicially created and conferred governmental immunity. It's not only ironic that now a government, a political subdivision, is claiming governmental immunity to put itself in a superior position to that of private landholders, but now it's contrary to the property rights conferred on the citizens alone as they stand against political subdivisions such as DART. It's the private property rights of citizens who deserve the protection the Constitution provides, not DART. The opinion below should be reversed. After all, DART's position turns this state's constitutional commitment to private property rights on its head.
On what do you take issue with the Court of Appeals on? That it's an in rem action, or that it's not for money damages, or what's the argument that immunity does not apply here?
Well, Your Honor, from the Court of Appeals decision before HB 971, the Court of Appeals ignored over 100 years of established law and practice in the state of allowing the condemnation of private property through eminent domain proceedings. The Texas legislature has reenacted the same statute over and over again. If the legislature had a problem with these types of eminent domain proceedings, certainly they would have said something to that effect. So, based upon that long-standing precedent, the Court of Appeals should never have said that governmental immunity protected public lands from eminent domain proceedings. If there are any further questions?
Here's none. Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Ms. Hollins will present the argument for the respondents.
May it please the court, waivers of immunity are accomplished by clear and unambiguous language. That's the long-standing standard that this court and the Texas legislature has mandated. The Court of Appeals in this case is correct in its majority decision in determining that DART and the T's immunity had not been waived by clear and unambiguous language when it analyzed the statute giving Encore eminent domain authority at the time that the court rendered its judgment in this case.
Ms. Hollins, in Humble Pipeline versus State, in 1928 Court of Appeals opinion, however writ refused by this court, we concluded that the grant of express statutory authority of condemnation carried with it the power to condemn public lands as well as private lands. Why should this case be different?
Your Honor, our position is that Humble did not actually analyze the statute at issue in this particular case. Immunity was not raised in the Humble case. The factors that this court has outlined in guiding whether or not immunity is waived were not considered in the Humble case. And so since the legislature has enacted Section 311.034, and this court has mandated that language to waive immunity must be clear and unambiguous. And if there's any ambiguity, the ambiguity is resolved by retaining immunity. We don't believe that the Humble case applies to this scenario because it was not the same statute analyzed. It was not an electric utility that was at issue in terms of its power to condemn.
Do I take it then that your view is every statute authorizing condemnation authority has to state going forward private as well as public lands can be condemned? If it's otherwise clear and unequivocal about the authority and the waiver to proceed, does it have to be clear about public and private separately?
Your Honor, our position on that would be that the statute, a condemnation statute, has to be strictly construed with the words that are used. And in this particular situation, Section 181.04, Encore's statute did not authorize it to condemn land owned by a governmental entity or by the state, because it only said that it had the power to condemn land of a person or a corporation. DART and the T are neither of those.
What effect would House Bill 971 have on this case?
If 971 is applied as Encore is advocating to the court, it would be a retroactive application. In this scenario, in this case, the Court of Appeals rendered a judgment adjudicating the issue of immunity in this case. A condemnation suit, by its nature, is obviously a suit whose effect would be the ability to take property rights, to take land, easements, or whatever the case might be. And DART and the T have vested rights in protecting their property, in determining how and whether to litigate any attack on that property or any type of forced sale of that property. That this would affect the resources that DART and the T or other governmental entities might use in determining how to protect itself from attacks on its property.
Do you concede that if 971, if the court finds 971 does apply to this and other pending cases, do you concede that you necessarily lose?
If I understand your question correctly, I think you're asking whether if the case is remanded.
No, if this court were to find that House Bill 971 applies to this case, this pending case, is there still a path to victory, or are you up a creek?
Our position on that, Your Honor, is that 971, as it's written, is still unclear and ambiguous.
You still say it doesn't clearly and unambiguously
waive immunity. Exactly, because it does preserve, it has a clear intention to preserve immunity. And it's not clear that the intention is to disturb the immunity that is afforded to the state, its agencies, political subdivisions, and the like.
Now, the amicus submitted by the utility companies, CenterPoint Energy, and those entities state that there's no limitation on this bill, that it doesn't prevent for us, its effect is immediate, and so it didn't have any impact on whether or not a case is in the loop waiting for a decision or not, and that we should apply it immediately. Have you read that? Brief, you have a response to that?
That the case is...
That the House bill, as it's written, we can it's effective immediately. There are no limitations to it.
Yes, Your Honor. The language of House Bill 971 does say that it's effective. It passed by the required majority, and so it's been effective since June of 2011. This particular case, our case, has a judgment, and we believe that because of that, the review of this particular case would be focused more on whether or not the Court of Appeals actually properly construed the statute as it existed at the time it rendered its judgment, not necessarily to apply a statute that doesn't have any express language that it should be applied retroactively. Going forward, it appears to us to be a prospective statute because the presumption hasn't been overcome by the language of the statute.
Counsel, understanding your position, what exactly would the legislature have meant in your view by the language that in section or in 971, the rights extended to an electric corporation under section 181.004, and this is the language I'm looking at, include all public land except land owned by the state? So how would, what does that language mean if we preclude land except that owned by the state from being condemned? What does the language mean if that in fact is what you believe it means?
The language is, as I've said, Your Honor, we believe it's unclear what it means. And that in itself means that the ambiguity there has to be resolved in favor of retaining the immunity that Dart and the T.
So your interpretation would have to mean that the electric corporations under 181.004 could not then condemn public land, even if it did not belong to the state, because it seems, do you have any other position that you would be taking on that? Because if the land is owned by someone other than the state, wouldn't the eminent domain proceeding have to go against the entity that owned the land?
Yes, Your Honor. There's...
So if it did go against municipal land or something else other than owned by the state, would it be your position that even though this says that land could be subject to eminent domain, it can't because of governmental immunity?
And that's the quandary. That's the unclear aspect of.
But that would be your position.
Right. There's other land that's not owned by the state in the state of Texas that could be considered public, such as Federal Reserves and things of that nature. Texas is a broad state with lots of land, but it is not clear that the legislature, beyond doubt, intended to waive immunity for governmental entities. It could have simply said so.
Then what would be the point of the language? And why enact what they enacted if it's completely ineffective? And why give utilities the power to condemn public land if they could never condemn public land because the public landowner says, I don't think so, I'm immune?
The unclear and ambiguous nature of the language still preserves immunity, and that's our position.
So your point is lawmakers may have attempted to allow utilities the power to condemn public land, but they fumbled. They just didn't make it as express and clear as they should have.
I don't think that the language does live up to the standard that's been set by the court or the legislature in this particular situation.
Mr. Ho says that DART and the Fort Worth Authority may be political subdivisions of the state, but you're not the state. And what do you say in response?
We're not the state of Texas, for sure. In some scenarios, maybe we would be looked at in that way. However, sovereign immunity provides the same types of protection as governmental immunity. It flows from the state, and every arm and political subdivision would have the same protection that the state would have under sovereign immunity.
Looking at House Bill 971, when it says, except land owned by the state, and again, assuming for the sake of argument that 971 applies, you would say that DART and the Fort Worth Authority are shoehorned within that language, except land owned by the state.
Yes, Your Honor.
With respect to whether immunity is waived in Wichita Falls versus Taylor, this court set out four factors, if you will, to look at to determine whether the legislature clearly and unambiguously waived immunity when it didn't use magic words. Can you comment on how those factors fit into your assertion that the legislature did not waive immunity?
The first
specifically referencing section 181.004, since the Encore has condemned land for many, many years under that.
In the Court of Appeals, in reviewing section 181.004, did use the Taylor standards or guidelines, and it looked at whether the language itself, the plain language of the text, was clear and unambiguous, a clear and unambiguous waiver of immunity. And in this particular, in that statute, it is not clear and express that immunity is waived. And they also looked at the fact that although it says person, and person is a term that's used to include governmental entities under the Code Construction Act, they specifically looked at the fact that that cannot be used to infer that the legislature intended to waive immunity. So on that basis, it was not a clear and unambiguous waiver of immunity. And then secondly, whether or not, when the magic words, so to speak, were not used, they still looked, and the Taylor guidelines still require that the intent to waive immunity must be beyond doubt. It must be found beyond doubt. And in this scenario, Section 181.004 says that electric utility, in this case, only has the authority to condemn land owned by a person or a corporation, and T or persons or corporations, and therefore the language is not clear and unambiguous.
I was focusing on Justice Murphy's dissent, where she also went through the Taylor factors and argued that the power to condemn land under 181.04 would be rendered meaningless adopting. So can you comment on why such a position does not render it meaningless?
The statute would not be rendered meaningless by preserving immunity, because Encore and electric utilities would still have the power to condemn land. They would still have the power to put to erect their lines. They would still have the power to negotiate with private and public entities, as they had for several years. And in our case, we have had over 800 agreements with them to do this very thing. And we have always been able to negotiate and come to an agreement. And so, therefore, the ability to negotiate and to continue and to still have the power to condemn, the statute is not meaningless just because immunity is preserved, because the utilities still retain those powers.
Yes, the argument was if governmental entities refuse to participate, then that renders it meaningless.
If the governmental immunity says that we that they cannot bring the suit for condemnation against us without consent, without a clear and unambiguous waiver of our immunity. So we have the case has never been that we have strictly refused to negotiate with them, and it's not in our brief, but we even have under the Transportation Code, Section 452.061, DART and the T are required to negotiate fair and reasonable, non-discriminatory rates and fares for the use of the regional transportation system. And I apologize that that's not in the brief, and I'd be happy to do a post-submission letter.
It seems like this might be considered a little different than a rate or fare for use of the system. And would you have a response to the amicus's position that if DART or TRE simply says, you know, whatever offer is made to us is unreasonable and we have governmental immunity, then how is Encore going to get their line put other than going all the way around your property and condemning a great deal of private land so they can get that line done? Is there any other way that they can do that?
I believe the proper mechanism for Encore or utility to use if DART or the T is not being fair in its negotiation would be a writ of mandamus to have the government official to do what it is legally bound to do, and that is to negotiate a fair and reasonable price for the use of the system.
and you classify this as a use of the system going across the line. They're not actually using this. They're using the land or the air above it or the land below it or whatever, however, whatever they want to condemn. But so your in your view, that has to fall within a use of the system.
The authority would be made up of the land that it owns, the structures, and so forth. So, yes, an easement across our land or use of our land, Section 451.061 would cover that. Any fee that we charge for use of our land would be covered under that section.
What about municipal land? If the municipality just said, no, we're not going to give you an easement, and we're not going to negotiate, and you can't sue us. Go all the way around the city of Dallas, put that line all the way east over to the east side of Texas or wherever it is that you want to go. Would there be any option that they have other than doing that under the way you read this statute?
Your Honor, I don't know specifically what statute the municipality might have to control how it negotiates for use of its property, but in erecting its lines, utility companies have always had to do that with the consent of the municipality. And according to the briefs in this case, Encore may have exercised condemnation of a governmental entity's land maybe five times since 1930, according to them. So it seems that because of the number of agreements that are always that are generally made, these easements are usually made by agreement, that the idea that somehow now all of a sudden nobody will negotiate fairly is, it seems strange, because the ability to condemn hasn't been there from our perspective. And so that was never a motivating factor in how we negotiated over 800 times with them.
The parties have argued whether House Bill 971 would waive the respondent's immunity in this case. Do you think we should decide that issue or send it back to the trial court to decide?
I think in this scenario, since the Court of Appeals has rendered a judgment, the focus of the appeal would be on whether or not they properly construed the statute as it existed at the time that they rendered the decision.
So we shouldn't address 971 at all?
I don't think it applies to this case.
But if it does, should we remand it? If it, hypothetically, if it does, or address it? And I understand that you say it doesn't, but if it does.
Should this court
send it back so that the lower courts have an opportunity to?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because then you would still have the issue of whether it waives immunity or not. And if it doesn't waive immunity, then that's it seems like it would be a waste of judicial.
Are there any other questions?
If I may, Chief, just curious, why is Fort Worth Transportation Authority called the T? I saw that in the briefs, but I don't know why.
I believe that's just a short term for it.
The T?
The T.
Okay.
Better than FWT. Shorter. Thank you, Ms. Hoffman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court will hear rebuttal.
Briefly on the remand point, the court has the option to do either. Encore would certainly welcome a ruling in our favor on 971 if the court's interested in doing so.
Counsel.
But if we're inclined to rule against you, you'd prefer to go back to the trial court.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
In City of Galveston versus State, this court held a divided opinion, but still the court held that a city could assert governmental immunity against the state in a suit for money damages. Is your position in this court today in tension with City of Galveston versus State or not?
I don't think either side relies on Galveston one way or the other. I suppose it could mildly support us.
Which actually may or may not be important to our decision, because we've got to get the law right. Any tension between the opinion and your position today?
I don't see any tension. I don't think DART sees any tension. I suppose it could mildly support us, just to the extent that it does exemplify the fact that there are different kinds of immunities that the different kinds of entities
well,
can assert.
Well, an argument might go that if a city can assert immunity against the state in a suit for money damages, as in that case, that another type of governmental unit, not the state, could assert immunity in a condemnation action. That would be the logic that someone might argue. Do you see a tension with your position?
No, because I think the issue, I think everybody would agree that had the legislature waived in that case, then it would be a 9-0 opinion that of course the suit could proceed. The whole debate here is whether there's been a waiver, so I don't think nobody's contesting that you need a legislative waiver in this case. With respect to Justice Guzman's question about the Taylor factors, how they apply to 971, we would submit that factor number one easily disposes it. It's the meaningless prong. I think the response on this, whether or not it would be meaningless, I think they essentially conceded that it would be that the R provision, 971, would be meaningless. They sort of described it as a quandary. I think this court has explained in Taylor, under that factor, what do you do with that quandary? If it's meaningless, you find a waiver. With respect to Justice Wainwright on the Humble Pipe, 971, of course, provides a simpler remedy, but just to address the Humble Pipe point, basically what we've heard is Humble Pipe dealt with a different statute. A different statute, but the exact same language and part of the same family of statutes. We've not heard once, either from the court below or from Dart, why the exact same language should be construed differently just because it's codified in a different section. With respect to Justice Lerman on the discussion about retroactivity and Aaron Sibia, we've heard essentially two responses today. One, that Aaron Sibia doesn't apply because in here, the judgment was actually rendered below. In other words, if I understand the proposed rule correctly, if Dart wins below, you can't review the case. If they lose below, you can rule on the case. Separate in part from the fact that that's a self-serving rule, I would think that the court would be profoundly disturbed by the notion that the court's not entitled to review a jurisdictional ruling by a lower court, and certainly there's no authority for that proposition. They also mentioned that they have vested rights. This court said the exact opposite and took. Governmental entities do not have vested rights with respect to immunity. Lastly, there's a reference to the 800 agreements that the parties have been able to undertake in the past. That, of course, was under the century of law, practice, understanding, and precedent that there was eminent domain backing up those agreements. Under their view, if that's true going forward, those 800 agreements will become 800 opportunities for extortion. And that's just with respect to Dart alone, not accounting for all the other political subdivisions that will surely come out of the woodwork going forward. In summary, Dart's position is legally flawed, we submit, but it's not just legally flawed. It's bad for private property rights, as we've heard from Miki. It's also bad for Texas consumers. After all, Dart's transportation system crisscrosses the Dallas area. So their position threatens to turn our energy transmission system into an obstacle course, as Justice Johnson alluded to earlier. There's no reason for any of this, as the legislature has just recently reaffirmed. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ho. The cause is submitted. That concludes arguments for this morning, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise.
Oyez,
oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned.